Hi, I'm Paul Scheel, and you're listening to the Public Relations Podcast, Smoke Signal. Most PR practitioners are used to managing issues. In fact, many of us thrive the best when we're in the midst of a major crisis. But what about war? That is the situation that has faced my guest on this episode of the Smoke Signal podcast since Russia invaded Ukraine at the start of 2022. Julie Petrick is head of MacPaw. MacPaw, for PC tragics like me, is a software development company that has apps installed on one in every five Macs worldwide. It has over 30 million users and 500 staff with its headquarters in Kiev, Ukraine. Julie, thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Smoke Signal. Since the start of the year, all Australians have been horrified by the images coming out of Ukraine. And in many ways, we have felt helpless in what we can do to make a difference. So I'm really grateful for you taking the time to share your story. And it's a story that spans both the professional and personal, but also firmly reminds us of the power of PR and communications. Let us start from the beginning. It's 5 a.m., the 24th of February, 2022. How did you learn about the invasion? What was your first reaction? And how long did it take you to turn your attention to the need for swift and effective communication?
What a good question. Probably I would disappoint you, but at 5 a.m. on that horrible morning, I was asleep. As a communicator, I can be a bit tired of abundance of communication. That's why my phone has that night mode on without any notifications working. So in the morning, I didn't hear explosions or the sounds of air raid sirens. And I was only awakened at 7 a.m. when a friend of mine could get through and inform me that they are already leaving the city. When she phoned me, I immediately understood that it all started already. I picked up my phone and said, "Has it all begun?" And she said, "Didn't you know that?" And yeah, I heard that the street outside was unusually noisy and crowded. I looked outside the window and I saw long, long lines of cars getting to gas stations or people standing in a line to a drugstore. And it was obvious that something is going on and the situation is very unusual. We were informed, previously, there were a lot of rumors that it's going to happen, but everybody was skeptical that it would happen in that scale, how it turned out to be, that that Russia would attack Ukraine in eight directions simultaneously. So the first thought was, how can I take care of my family, my daughter? I gave a call to my husband, who was away on a business trip in another Ukrainian city. And he said, "I've read the news. I'm already on my way for 2 hours already. I'm getting home. Wait for me there." And yeah, it took some time for me to understand what to do next, whether I need to wake up my daughter or to let her sleep a bit longer, as it's going to be a long day ahead. I switched on the TV to listen to the news. And lately, my daughter remembered that she was awakened by the sounds of the TV, as it was very uncommon for our apartment to watch TV, and especially to watch TV at 7 a.m. So this is how it all began.
Yeah, it's just chilling. It's not comprehensible of what you had to go through. I mean, I think before I progress any further, I should ask probably what's everyone's lips, is that at the moment you're safe and well and the family is all safe and well?
My husband is in Ukraine right now. I'm abroad temporarily. I was on a long business trip. That's why I took my daughter I brought my daughter abroad as well, not to worry about her safety while my husband is away for business trips. Men are not allowed to leave the country. It's illegal to cross the border, so he stays there with our cat, whom we actually adopted during the war times. And I'm so happy he had someone by his side to take care about. My parents are there. And yeah, I wouldn't say that anybody is safe in Ukraine. I still worry a lot about my team, about my friends, about my family, obviously. And this is my plan to come back. And hopefully we will have an opportunity to come back for holidays. But I am temporarily abroad because of the business trip I took. And my daughter is having online exams in her university right now, a Ukrainian university. But in Ukraine, we had a really terrible situation with electricity outage, a lot of breaks in electricity supply during the day. So it's very challenging to work online, to study online. So I take the benefit of staying abroad for making sure that my work is done properly and my daughter studies.
So let's jump into that work piece. So you're in this situation, as I said, incomprehensible situation where you're worried about, your family, your daughter, your own safety. Yet you've got this role as the head of PR at MacPaw. And I imagine there's no crisis management playbook for this type of scenario. So what did you have to think about and do quickly in those first few hours and days once the attack happened?
Yeah, thank you for the question. We were never trained or taught to deal with such crisis as the war that we faced on that morning. But before the invasion, there were rumors by the foreign intelligence that it's going to happen. So MacPaw, as the company, took some measures to make sure that the business going to operate properly. What we did is we set up alternative ways of communicating within the company with other team members. It was on Signal, and I sent messages to all my team members who were staying in Ukraine, whether they are safe, what they are doing. And after I got confirmation that all of them were taking care of their safety, getting somewhere, traveling somewhere, taking trains to safer places, I reported it to our main channel. And then we need to calm down our customers who would obviously worry about the fate of the apps they bought from the company or for the subscription they pay for apps that we develop. So before the invasion, the company made sure that all the products that we develop, like CleanMyMac, Gemini, Setup, are in a code freeze mode. It means that no changes are done to the current version of the app. So the servers were outside the country. There was a critical team who supported the functioning of the apps. They were not in the epicenter of the events. And we sent our customers a message saying that they shouldn't worry about the performance of the apps by MacPaw, as we had a huge database which exceeds 30 million users worldwide. And honestly, I would say that we had a draft of the blog post of the statement we're gonna make, but of course it was rewritten when it all happened, because even when you try to imagine the situation, to picture it, it's totally different from what you see in reality. So it didn't take us very long to draft this statement, as it it had at least some draft before, but definitely it was different from the ones we had. I remember when I was editing it before the invasion, my comment was like, we sound too emotional. Let's like decrease the degree of our emotions here. But when it all happened, I didn't mind being emotional, as you just couldn't be under those circumstances.
So what do you even say in those circumstances? I mean, it must just be surreal. I guess, how did you craft that story and that narrative to tell employees, to tell customers, to tell partners? Because it would have been such an uncertain time, right?
Right. But we need to assure that our business is operating, and actually it's our business that helped us to continue like supporting Ukraine, to continue making donations. That's why it was critical on so many levels to support business and don't let our customers go.
And then over the next few weeks, you purposely get your CEO out there actively talking to media, actively communicating through your own channels. What was the message, and why do you think that was so necessary at that point in time?
It was actually a very great discovery about the role of leadership during the war times. The CEO of the company, Alexander Kosovan, is a very humble person. I wouldn't call him a frequent guest of TVs, podcasts. So he would prefer rather doing than speaking about it. But when it all happened, we were avalanched by a number of media requests about the situation. As MacPaw is a well-known app developer, we had certain relations with technology media, and all of them wanted to know what's going on, how we're gonna operate, how people can help us. And I remember that I didn't even have time to evaluate the readership of any media that outreaches us for comments, interviews. And I asked Alexander to prepare a very short piece of video about his ideas, about his statement, about his views about the invasion. And actually, it was our response to one YouTube blogger who asked us for that piece of recording. And actually, she included just a smaller part of it into the final version of the YouTube video she prepared. And I thought that it was one of the most powerful speeches by Alexander ever, because like he was recording it the next day or probably in the evening of that horrible day. Now I understand that my memory plays games with me, that I don't remember the consequences of those first hours, as it's like complete mass of information back then. But what we did with that statement by Alexander, we reused it on multiple platforms. And after that, we had a new waves of media requests from CNN, Yahoo Finance. A lot of TV channels wants to talk to him. And the story was told not on behalf of the business, but on behalf of the real person, real founder, real CEO who was facing those terrible challenges to take care of the business, of the team, of the family. And it was very convincing for so many people. And I'm grateful to Alexander for saying yes to all interview opportunities. I bet a lot of PR and comms practitioners would listen to this interview and probably roll their eyes, thinking that how many times like their CEOs were reluctant to talk to media. But Alexander agreed to all the media opportunities, like to all the press interviews. For example, Japanese TV, 7 a.m. Sunday morning, he said, okay, I'll do that. And a lot of interviews were recorded or like done in his Tesla while he was in his parking during air raid sirens, like those, when those attacks happen, you need to be in a safe place, in a bomb shelter. And it's like Alexander's garage. And some interviews were recorded from Tesla. If people don't get the point why he's sitting in the car, it's not because he wanted to be there. It's because he was made to be there because of unsafe situation around.
Yeah, wow. And so what convinced him to be that open and that transparent and that honest at that point in time? And have you been able to quantify, I guess, the impact that that has had and the benefit that that's had for the organization?
I was thinking about it a lot. It turned out that during the most critical moments in the business development stage, PR comes into hand when some crisis happens. And the war actually was the background of demonstrating how meaningful relations can be. So public relations, yeah, like is totally about building relationships with different stakeholders, different publics. And the war actually proved how the business can benefit from them. I mean, on the human perspective. For example, when we had a lot of emails of support from our customers asking, how can we help you? We've been using Clean My Mac for years. Like, we've been fans of your apps. Please tell us what to do. At first, we gave a list of acknowledged, recognized like donation funds where people can donate to help Ukraine. But then we even made MacPo Foundation public for other people to join and make donations. And it was obviously a decision driven by our customers, or let's say media representatives even called, sent us emails like saying that they wage all the payments and till the end of the year, they keep the key sponsorship package for our company for free just for like supporting us. Or there were cases when our international partners even suggested us their advertising slots during the rocket launch. They were, yeah, prime time. Yeah, and they said, like, we are fine to give it to you to call for help to Ukraine. So it was so obvious that the relations that we've built during the long journey of building MacPo really paid off when it all started.
So you have all this happening in your day job. The country's under attack. But you decide you need to do more, and you co-found what's called the Ukraine PR Army. And this is what I've heard you speaking about previously and how I came to connect with you. So tell us about the PR Army and how did it come about and what is its mission?
Yeah, thank you for the question. PR Army is an unprecedented case of how PR community can be united for the common goal, like fighting the enemy, fighting the external enemy. So it took us only a couple of hours to figure out what's going on. And like even people who used to be competitors joined the PR Army just for fighting with that common enemy. I am trying like to refresh in my memories how it all started. So on the 24th of February, on that horrendous day, I remember there was a message in the chat with graduates of my course. I teach international PR in Ukraine, and I have like a very tight community of PR practitioners who are working on the international market. And one of the ex-graduates came up to that chat saying, "Hey guys, girls, we all have well-built relations with media abroad. Let's tell them what's going on. Let's use our weapon of fighting for truth. It's a word." And till the end of the day, there were over 100 people who voluntarily joined that chat to like volunteer for PR Army. And since day one, we've been working hand in hand together to fight with Russian propaganda, to fight with misinformation, to fight for like spreading truth about the events in Ukraine. And we haven't stopped like for a day, and it's gonna be like soon it's gonna be 10 months already of our constant fighting. And I'm very proud of PR Army as a response to unjust invasion of Russia to an independent sovereign Ukraine. And we've been doing a great job with PR Army to make sure that Ukrainian voices are heard and they are vocal in the international media. Like on a side note, I would say that we are not affiliated with the country, I mean with the government, and we are joking that PR Army is as an PR agency for Ukraine, but Ukraine doesn't know about that.
Yeah, I just love the concept of this idea that, you know, wars are fought around communication and propaganda, as you say. I mean, disinformation and misinformation has been a hot topic in comms for the last decade, right? It must have really gone to a whole new level in a war situation. What did you see on the front line? How did that play out in those first hours and days?
Oh, it's a huge problem. We wanted to address it in so many ways. Even in our company, in MacPaw, we even took efforts to speak to our Russia and Belarus-based users, and we communicated through our apps, like targeting only those geographical areas to spread the news about the ongoing situation in Ukraine. Like after our attempts that failed, we cut off those countries from the places where our products are available. But still, like we made that those efforts to spread the truth. We were saying, like with a banner inside the product, as I mentioned, that it has like a very wide audience. Tried to say the truth that this is like a story of what is happening in Ukraine. It was written in Russian, so that the users would understand what's going on. And we even had a separate blog post on our corporate blog saying in Russian and in English what's going on in the country. And we were providing a number of reputable resources where people could follow the truth about the events happening in Ukraine. And in a day or so, there was a notification, there was a notice to our corporate email that our blog was featured among the banned in the Russian Federation by their main censorship body, Roskomnadzor, meaning that people from Russia and Belarus can't get access to that page in their locations. And it was actually some recognition of our efforts, as it means that we were doing the right thing. If Russian censorship body bans us, it means that we were really fighters for truth. But still, we were very happy that during the first day of that page availability, we managed to have more than 400,000 people to that page from Russia and Belarus who were able to at least read what we were trying to convey. But we failed completely. We were, as citizens, asking citizens of other countries to protest about the war, to run some demonstrations. We failed because they didn't do what we counted them to do as humans, what we expected them to do. But we didn't fail as the nation because we tried other sources. And with the PR army, we found the most effective way of addressing all the audiences and fighting for truth is actually giving access to truth. So as the representatives of the PR army, we provide access to eyewitnesses of events which are happening in Ukraine, to experts in different domain, nuclear engineers or military men who are available for comments, for interviews. And actually, this is the best way to fight with propaganda, by giving access to truth.
And so how big is the PR army now, and how do you coordinate all these different pieces of activity that's happening?
It's a good question. I remember that there were days when we had more than 400 people in the PR army. They are not all of them. Not all of them are communicators. There are also designers or translators, as in Europe we need to work with different languages. A lot of them. But what's the problem we face with a non-profit organization, that most of people join voluntarily and they really burn out quickly, or sometimes they have different tasks to do, even moving from dangerous areas. That's very, very challenging. We've been living in that state of constant stress for almost 10 months already. And that's why we always look for new volunteers to join. But we have a very well-built and well-knit team of coordinators. We even managed to run strategic sessions during those crazy days just to figure out how the structure will be, how we will distribute different streams. So we are working in different directions. Let's say eyewitnesses, who is constantly looking for witnesses in different areas to give access to international media. Or we have a separate stream, who's responsible for making Ukrainian voices vocal and providing op-eds, opinions to international media by Ukraine-based experts. Then we have a special stream of dealing with the problem of deportation. Russia deports people and kids from Ukraine, from occupied territories to Russia, and make them adopt by Russian families. And that's it's an act of genocide, that those kids will be brought up totally in hate to everything Ukrainian, to Ukrainian language, to Ukrainian culture, and they would probably never identify that their origin is Ukrainian. And it's a big problem, and now we are spreading the word about it. This is probably a topic for a dedicated episode about PR Army and how we organize everything inside it. But yeah, like our main goal is to make sure that Ukraine's image is at least like Ukraine is present on the international agenda and like strengthen its presence as an independent democratic country.
Yeah, just it's kind of emotional hearing those stories. You can't believe it's 2022 and things like that are happening where children are being forcibly deported.
Absolutely. I'm always wondering how it's going to happen when the humankind was evolving all this time and now we are like back to some medieval times.
Yeah. Well, it certainly sounds like a well-organized machine. So is the goal now moving forward really to ensure that Ukraine stays in the news and that it's not forgotten about?
I would say that by traveling the last month, I see that Western countries do experience that war fatigue. All of them are preparing for Christmas already, like all those decorations, playlists. It's fine, yeah, that the people in other countries don't have borders with Russia and don't have those problems that we face every time. But still, it's not fine to forget that it's happening next door, that it's happening in Europe, in the biggest European country, those like horrific events. And our goal is like to make sure that Ukraine is represented properly in the international scene. And of course, like our goal is to make sure that the sanctions and other activities by foreign countries do work for stopping this war and like defeating Russia.
Well, it's certainly impressive that you've been able to do such a great job for MACPOR, but also for the country as a whole. Tell me, have you had a chance to step back and reflect on the past year and I guess think about any learnings from a communications and PR perspective? Because I imagine the experience you had would be significant lessons for any crisis communicators listening.
Yeah, I've been reflecting a lot, and I heard from so many people that during the wartime, they finally understood the importance of PR. Actually, I don't wish anybody to go through what we are going through, but it's so obvious that any kind of organizations, businesses, countries do need PR. And it was so obvious that our team became a shield of all the communication efforts, like incoming, like internal and external for sure. So we were like that front line of what we were communicating, how we spread our messages, how we dealt with our customers. And you probably know, and I remember your previous, one of the previous episodes about measurement in PR. And we had like very tangible outcomes of the relations that we've built previously. It was a number of donations made for MACPOR Foundation. As I mentioned already, that it was totally an initiative of our customers to make it public so they can help. And with the help of our customers, vendors, partners, we managed to raise up to $700,000. And it's a huge support. And actually, this is like a tangible metric of how the relationship can be converted into real help. And we are so thankful and grateful for everybody who stands with Ukraine, who supports it, and never misses a chance to spread the word about it.
Yeah, I think in that episode with Katie Payne, the Queen of Measurement, she said you only you can only really measure the effectiveness of PR in a crisis. So I think you've had the ultimate crisis, and as you said, it's proven the value that it can deliver.
Yeah, and I remember that in our internal measurement system, we saw that during the first quarter, when it was all about the war and communicating about war, we had 7.7 times more media coverage rather than usual. So it was a huge interest in Ukraine-based company, and we did it for we tried to do that for the benefit of the country, and like spreading the word about what was going on.
I love that. That often when we talk measurement, people say I don't have time, and here you are in the midst of a war, and you're still measuring the impact of the PR and communication program. So that's quite impressive.
Yeah, I would probably love to inspire others who don't work under such stressful conditions that PR does matter, and PR as a business function is so critical. And when you are facing those difficulties like the war, it's so obvious. And I would also stress out, I would also make an emphasis about the power of community, that the PR army even managed to get unbelievable results. And talking about the results of the PR, there is one result that I am exceptionally proud of. It's an outcome from the PR army activity that thanks to the article that we secured in a number of publications, we even have two cases when people were released out of Russian captivity. Can you imagine that?
It's
like saving someone's life through traditional PR channels. It's just insane, and it drives me mad, but at the same time totally grateful and inspired that thanks to our efforts of the Ukrainian PR army, we even managed to save someone's life. And if we can amplify our efforts and send lives of thousands, millions, let's do that.
I was going to ask you a personal question. I think maybe you've just answered it a bit there, in that you're speaking so confidently and you sound so resilient about, you know, what you've been through. I think one of the iconic photos that I've seen of you is this idea of where you were literally working out of your bathtub. So you're in an office, you're working, it's day to day. 2 weeks later, you're working out of your bathtub. I mean, it must have just been surreal. How have you managed to continue to fight the good fight on everything that you're doing? And as I say, you may have just answered that with the kind of outcomes that you're looking to achieve.
Oh, let me explain why I was working from the bus stop.
Please do.
Yeah. So it's advised to find an innermost room, innermost space in the apartment if you don't have a special bomb shelter in the apartment or in the house where you live. And during air raid attacks, like Ukrainians are advised to go to a bomb shelter. If it's too far or it's not convenient, for example, I live on the multi-storied in the multi-storied building, and it takes time to go to a bomb shelter, which is in the underground parking. So we usually do hallways or like bathrooms for like getting safe. And I remember that the first days of the invasion were a complete shock, and I was afraid to even go to a bathroom. And my friend said, "Don't worry, it's supposed to be one of the safest places because it doesn't have windows." And ever since, like bathrooms, bus stops, were a place to work of so many Ukrainians. And when I showed those pictures to one of the colleagues I met at Cannes Festival, it was Cannes Lions for creative companies, and I happened to meet Ashley from Curiosity Agency, and she was smashed by the reality of Ukrainians, that PR people, like creative people, like colleagues like them, were working in bus stops, in bathrooms, and they even launched, by the way, I can already talk about it, they launched a campaign. Everybody can check out their website, or probably we will give it in podcast description. It's called busstopcreative.com. It's a kind of the news about the fake agency, which gonna work completely 100% from bathrooms. At first, people like got.
I did see your LinkedIn update on that, and I was intrigued.
Yeah, like this is like a part of the communication. So people who work from bus stops, from bathrooms, put it on LinkedIn that they are joining a new agency, Bus Stop Creative. And first, people don't get an idea, like what's the point? Like it's so absurd, like to people to work from bathrooms, what's going on? Why should they work there? But then there is a revelation that it's not for absurdity, it's not for fun, but it's like cruel reality of Ukrainian people, of Ukrainian creative, like creators, video producers, PR people, developers. We at MacPaw even managed to launch a new app, which was developed in completely 100% from bomb shelter. So it's like crazy reality, but we're gonna stand for our country. And yeah, like I advise everybody to check that busstopcreative.com website for like getting an idea of that communication campaign. And now we have another challenge. We need to find places where we have electricity or internet. And like probably we need to launch another challenge soon, not challenge, but another campaign soon with looking for generators for alternative energy supply and for alternative sources of internet connectivity. So yeah, this is what we are going through right now.
And so what is it that keeps you going and keeps you being so positive?
Probably belief in Ukraine. I keep saying that I am doing for everything that I do for my very selfish goal is that I do want that my grandchildren would have that option whether they want to live in Ukraine or elsewhere. So I do want to preserve my country for future generations, for the future. And it really drives me and it really gives me so much energy that we need to preserve our country for the future. And of course, international support. We are so thankful to everybody who stands with us and who understand that in this opposition of to the evil, it should be defeated.
Well, I couldn't think of a more worthy goal. So to finish up, how can we help? How can we help the PR army? How can people here in Australia help Ukraine? And how can we make an actual difference? Because I know, you know, we've all been horrified by the pictures and the scenes coming out, and even to what you've spoken to throughout this podcast is just unimaginable horror. And so how can people on the ground here help?
Thank you, Paul, for the words of support and for the words of empathy. It's really priceless. From the point of help, we are open. Actually, we appreciate any help because we sometimes do lack resources, funding, people, any help will do. What I advise to do is like to check our website. It's Ukrainian PR Army. I bet that you can Google and find it because there is only the one and the only. And there are like emails featured there, how you can reach, how one can reach. There are even like some account details for donations because we are in constant need of financial support too. And those who can help with any kind of resources or like running communication campaigns or like providing experts or like doing media coverage, everything is appreciated. And I also ask everybody to check that Bus Stop Creative thing because the whole idea of the campaign is not just to show in what reality and under which circumstances Ukrainian PR people work, and not only them, but it's also a raise of awareness and raise of donations that will go to MACPA Foundation, and we will supply people in deoccupied territories with hygienic products. So it's like a real help. And now when I travel, I see a lot of people getting ready for Christmas. But unfortunately, in Ukraine, so many people lost homes, lost families, but luckily haven't lost hope. And probably Christmas is that magic time of the year. We can all prove that we still believe in humanity.
Julie, I really want to thank you. You're such a courageous and resilient person. I don't think any of us can really appreciate all you've been through, but it's been an absolute privilege to hear and to share your story. Please do keep us updated on the PR Army, on how you go at MACPAW. And anything we can do, I'm confident that there's a community of PR practitioners here in Australia that would be ready and willing to help in any way we can. So certainly we'll share what you've just talked about there and get onto that Ukraine PR Army website and see how we can help.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Paul, again for having me, for raising awareness, for running this conversation. And I invite you to Ukraine after victory to show that it's not only me who is resilient, that's the whole nation who is fighting against the aggressor. And when we win, we don't in Ukraine say if we win, we say when we win. I invite you personally, I invite our Australian colleagues to Ukraine, to our fantastic country, when it's safe, when it's developing. I'm sure that day will definitely come.
That sounds like a fantastic plan. Thank you so much, Julie.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Smoke Signal, Australia's first podcast dedicated to the public relations sector. If you've enjoyed this episode, please rate us on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts, and do share the podcast with others in the profession. I'm Paul Cheel, and I look forward to continuing the conversation on LinkedIn, Twitter and Facebook. Thanks for listening.